Portland's Hidden History of Discrimination historic bus tour. It's part of the 20th anniversary celebration by the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. And our guest is Diane Hess. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa.
A lot of people think that the civil rights issues around housing have long since been resolved by the federal housing laws and state and local laws, but it's not so. And the Fair Housing Council of Oregon gets thousands of complaints a month
on
this issue.
A year.
All right.
But still a lot. Huge.
So, Diane, let me just say, April 23rd is going to be the annual fundraiser for the Fair Housing Council, and they're going to have the historic bus tour, but also at noon, they're going to have National Book Award winning author Kevin Boyle, who's the author of Arc of Justice, a saga of race, civil rights, and murder in the jazz age. It's going to be a noon luncheon program, and he's going to be speaking about that. Plus, they're going to have people from the Fair Housing Council giving a report about the nonprofit organization's work over the past year. Diane, can you just drill down into this issue a little bit? I feel as though this is a great opportunity for people who are our listeners to get a sense of what does the law say and when are you actually being discriminated against? Go ahead.
Yes. Well, actually, there was a lead in a little promo before we started the program about it being the 42nd anniversary of the death of Dr. King. It's also the 42nd anniversary of the passage of the Fair Housing Act. So it has been a long time. And interestingly, one piece of history is that act was passed right after the death of Dr. King. President Johnson and advocates had been trying to get it through Congress. It's very interesting now looking at what the remarks Congress had to say after this healthcare debate. It looks very similar. This will destroy the free enterprise system. This will lead to us being the Soviet Union. Very interesting to look at it. But, you know, there were riots in the street, and eventually Congress realized they needed to do something to show they were potentially paying attention. So they did pass the Fair Housing Act. And so people now will say, well, that's, you know, 42 years ago. We have an African-American president. What's the problem here? Why is it that you're getting, you know, thousands of calls every year? And to answer that, I would say, first of all, you know, now we cover the whole state, and the situation in Portland may be different than Klamath Falls or Grants Pass or other areas of the state where we still see fairly blatant discrimination. But here, you know, it's not going to be someone saying, no, I don't rent to Mexicans, or occasionally we still see we don't see kids, but discrimination may happen in a much more subtle way, which someone may or may not pick up. The way the law stands today under federal law is it is illegal to discriminate based on race or color or your national origin or your religion or sex or because you have kids. Oregon state law protects us from discrimination based on marital status, sexual orientation, gender identity, source of income, and domestic violence victims are also protected.
How about people who are living with some kind of physical disability?
That is all covered under federal law. And actually, 35%, which is quite high, of the calls we get on our Fair Housing hotline and the cases we deal with disability, both physical disability, mental and emotional disabilities, developmental disabilities. The Fair Housing Act is very strong in its protection. And there could be any number of issues. There could be a direct denial. It could be the housing itself was built not accessible in the not meeting the requirements of the law, or someone may need an accommodation, a service animal, carpeting ripped out because of a chemical sensitivity, putting in a roll-in shower, any of these kinds of things that they have a right to under the Federal Fair Housing Act.
Interesting. And this is Talk Radio. Our guest is Diane Hess of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. The number to call, we would love to hear from you if you have a story of being denied housing, or if you have a question about something that's happening to you now. Would be really interesting to hear that too. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Diane, so tell us a little bit more about what the Fair Housing Council of Oregon does.
Mm-hmm. We are a statewide organization. We serve all of Oregon, and we serve Southwest Washington, and our mission is civil rights in housing, illegal housing discrimination. So what I want to say to potential callers is we don't deal so much with state Oregon, you know, Oregon state landlord-tenant law. So what's the difference? Okay, let's say your landlord isn't fixing your heater. Your landlord isn't fixing anyone's heater. The landlord is a slumlord and not doing what they're legally responsible to do. If you contacted us, we'd probably refer you to an organization focusing on landlord-tenant law, like the Community Alliance of Tenants or Legal Aid or something like that. But what if it's the Latino tenants who aren't getting their heater fixed? Or what if your landlord is grumbling about you and your disability and doesn't fix your heater, and there may be a connection to, you know, you being discriminated against? That's where we would get involved. How do we get involved? Is, first of all, we have a hotline. If you have an issue and you're thinking, gee, I wonder if this is discrimination, if this, does this fall under civil rights laws? There's some way I can be helped here. We want you to call us, even if you're not sure, to help us sort it out with you. That's what we do on our hotline. A lot of folks don't call, don't do anything about it, and we want to make sure that landlords, real estate people, homeowners associations who are discriminating don't continue. So we may advocate for you, we may help you file a fair housing complaint, get the wheels of enforcement going if that's necessary. If not, we'll probably refer you to another resource. We also try to prevent discrimination from happening. My mother used to always say, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and we do a lot of work to make sure people know what their rights are and to make sure landlords, for example, know what their legal responsibilities are. Here in Oregon, there's no licensing for landlords. So any of you could go buy a fourplex and go off and discriminate and potentially have no idea what you're doing. There's not a test or anything like that. We've been lobbying for that but have been unsuccessful. So a landlord may not realize certain things and inadvertently violate the law. And of course, it's still a violation.
And one other piece of this is the idea of long-term trends in development that you brought up when I was discussing this with you yesterday. There are actually, aside from the individual experience of you've got some kids and you go and you look at an apartment and they find out you've got kids, and then when you go down there to look at the apartment, they say, oh, it's been rented. But there's also the larger issue of whole neighborhoods that seem to be headed towards concentrations of poverty or gentrification. Mm-hmm. And you look at that as well. Can you talk about that a little?
Right. Now, the Fair Housing Law applies to a whole range of entities. So obviously it applies to landlords and the homeowners associations, the banks and the real estate, and so on. It also applies, you know, in builders and developers. It also applies to jurisdictions. And here's where it may get a bit more complicated. What this means is cities, counties, states have a legal obligation to, quote, affirmatively further fair housing and not to perpetuate segregation. So when I spoke with you over the phone, Lisa, I mentioned a case, and I actually brought my numbers with me because it's a very interesting case that has a lot of implications. And one of the things we do at Fair Housing Council is watch cases all over the country and see what the implications may be. This was a federal case against Westchester County, New York. And the damages that this county are having to pay is $62.5 million. Quite a bit of money. Basically, what they had been doing is certifying to the federal government for years that they were, quote, affirmatively furthering fair housing, yet they were continuing to develop housing in ways that perpetuated segregation. You know, in terms, so part of the settlement is that new developments are going to have integration in mind in terms of, you know, where public housing is built. Anything that's going to break down segregation. I won't go into a lot of details about this case, but it definitely raises the issue around the country. Historically, cities and states have just said, yeah, we're doing this to the feds, and no one's really paid any attention. They have a legal responsibility to affirmatively further fair housing. Now, this means, at the very least, they should be, you know, having trainings, looking at what's going on, educating people about their rights, but it also means they need to be looking at segregation in their area and what they can do to stop it, and that needs to be integrated into their overall planning processes. Right now, for example, we're working with the state of Oregon on something called an analysis of impediments to fair housing. This is a document for the unentitlement areas of the state. What does that mean? Not the big cities. So city of Portland,
who would be listening to KABU, Washington County, Beaverton.
Columbia Gorge.
Not the Columbia Gorge, but bigger urban areas do their own plans. So the Columbia Gorge would fall under this plan, the state plan, to say what's happening around the state. You know, there'll be public forums. What are the issues? What's going on? And so they will identify those issues and come up with strategies and then submit them to the federal government. And our job as an advocate is to make sure that this is real and that people come to those hearings and bring up those issues. So for people in your listening area goes out to the gorge. How far east do you go?
It depends on where you are, but White Salmon, Washington.
Okay. So, and Washington would be, so for folks who are, say, in Hood River, who are east of the Multnomah County line, they would be included in this plan. Do you get any folks from Columbia or Clatsop counties? Do you go that
way? Yeah, I'm sure.
So anyway, there are different planning processes that happen. So as an advocate, there's a number of issues we're looking at, and that's a huge one. And we see the results of gentrification on an individual level as well, because all the folks that used to live in Northeast Portland and can't afford to live there and move out to East Grant County.
Park Rose, Hillsboro, even Washington County.
Right. They then face discrimination there after they have to move into these new areas and will contact us.
Diane Hess, Fair Housing Council of Oregon, is our guest. This is Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. This is the aha moment. I know that the problem that I have with trying to educate people about the fair housing civil rights laws is that their eyes start to roll back in their head because they're hearing the word planning and development and regulation and apartment complex. Okay, look at this here. Erin Campbell was shot in the Sandy Terrace Apartments, which, if you've ever been there, is one of the most profound clusters of poverty in the Park Rose neighborhood. This is what we're talking about in terms of long-term trends in civil rights law and housing. The housing issues affect everything. They affect the school quality. They affect people's perception of crime and police violence, right? When the police got that call to Sandy Terrace Apartments, they probably had a whole range of thoughts because, maybe people should go out there and check that place out. My husband used to be a teacher at Park Rose Elementary School, and it was one of these elementary schools where something like 80% of the kids are on free or reduced lunch. Mm-hmm. Kids from all over the world, kids of every race and ethnicity, and something like 60% of them lived in that one apartment building. The number to call is 503-231-8187. And just as an aside, I believe it's today that the city council hearing on the police accountability measures is going to be heard. But these issues, all these issues tie into housing. So we would love to hear from people who feel so maybe they've been discriminated against, but they're not sure. And if you have specific questions about the laws, or if you have a history of something that happened to you, please give us a call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Diane, she's just jumping up and down.
Oh, I wanted to add something because I want people to also understand that these laws are not static. They continue to evolve. For example, sexual orientation was added as a state-protected class fairly recently, a couple of years ago. We also are advocating for continuing expansion of these laws. For example, people who get Section 8 vouchers. I don't know if people have heard of Section 8. It's a program through the Housing Authority that helps people pay their rent. Right now, the law says landlords can refuse to rent to them. That's a huge problem. Someone may have to wait a couple of years for one of these things.
Yeah, you qualify for Section 8, but there's no place for you to take it.
Right. And that's something a lot of states do have a protection for people, so they can't be discriminated against. So that's something we'd like to change at a statewide basis. That's a long shot. More likely, we're hoping to do it, at least in the city of Portland, to present a model. But, you know, there's a lot of things that are unfair that are not necessarily illegal. For example, in Seattle, if you were discriminated against because of the political bumper stickers on your car, you could fight it. Not here in Oregon. You know, college students are not protected. A huge issue is people with criminal histories who have a felony in their history, no matter how long ago it was or what it was, that landlords can just say, we won't take you. So there's a lot of people in homeless shelters who can't get into housing. So, legally, a landlord could say, well, if you've ever had a traffic ticket, I won't take you. Unlikely, but they have that power. So there are some cities in other parts of the country that are starting to have protections there. So the point here is that we've come quite a ways, but there's still a lot of things that are happening out there. People call our hotline and they say, that's really unfair. And we'll say, well, it's not necessarily illegal, however. So we'll look if you're treated unfairly and see, is this connected to your race, to your sexual orientation, to your disability, to any of these protected classes? And if so, there's a hook where we can work with you.
The number to call is 503-231-8187. Looking at Fair Housing Council of Oregon celebrating its 20th anniversary, this April 23rd, having this amazing event. It's their annual fundraiser, the only fundraiser they do. Nonprofit organization that does what I just put out to you should be what government does, but they don't. And anyway, our guest is Diane Hess. So when you have this amazing event, April 23rd, and at 8:30 a.m., the historic bus tour of Portland's Hidden History of Discrimination, talk a little bit about what's on that tour, Diane Hess, and the number to call, 503-231-8187. But talk about what's on that tour and why.
Well, a lot of people, whether they grew up in Oregon or moved to Oregon, have, you know, never learned about some of the things about our history. For example, why is it we're predominantly white? You know, why is it there are so few African Americans here? Well, for example, it was illegal for African Americans to live in this state, and there were several laws, including one that specified how many lashes for men and women who were found in the state. And that was actually in our Constitution, the Oregon Constitution, until the late 1920s. So what we do is we go to different parts of the city. We look at different things that have happened, where people were rounded up, where the Klan rallies were, where hate crimes happened. And this is a chartered bus tour, so it's on chartered buses. And we do have presenters with personal experiences who share at certain locations. Now, throughout the year, we will do the tour for, you know, organizations that pay us. This is the one time that we open it up for anybody as an individual to sign up and come on the tour.
And we are looking at issues of fair housing, all of the civil rights aspects of that. And the number to call is 503-231-8187. And we have Joanne on the line. Joanne, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hello. I am suspecting that because of these times and housing is so hard to get, especially, well, housing is hard to get, and because of the structure, ongoing structure of the legal system, that if someone is living in public housing and is experiencing harassment and character assassination by employees or residents, that they cannot seek some kind of justice in the legal system, and probably because of being in public housing and low income, and probably be viewed anyway as being mentally ill. I will listen to your response.
Thanks, Joanne. Diane, are there different rules about public housing? And when, if you feel like you're getting harassed by someone who's on the staff or something of the public housing project, I mean, how when does that become a civil rights issue?
Well, first of all, there is, of course, and I'm sure Joanne knows about this, you know, an appeal process within the Housing Authority of Portland or Clackamas County or Washington County or whatever. Where fair housing would get involved is here. I mean, people harass each other for a lot of reasons, unfortunately. There's a lot of stuff going on out there. But if you believe the reason you're being harassed by the staff is because, say, of your disability, including a mental disability, okay? If you feel you're being treated differently, harassed because of that, and that's a protected class that falls under civil rights, that would be a time to call our hotline. Now, I'm going to add something to this, and this applies to public housing or any housing. So it's illegal for housing authority staff, landlords, managers, groundkeepers to harass you because of your disability, your sexual orientation, your race, national origin, and so on. It's also illegal if your neighbor in an apartment complex is doing this and your landlord or the housing authority staff doesn't do anything to stop it. So if you're being harassed by your next door neighbor because you're from India or because you're bisexual or any of these things, and you complain to the manager and the manager does nothing to investigate and attempt to resolve that situation, there's a violation of fair housing law there as well. So if you think the harassment is because of your disability, and you've tried within the housing authority structure and it hasn't worked, call our hotline.
And the number to call to ask a question of Diane Hess, Fair Housing Council of Oregon, is 503-231-8187. Diane, is there a burden of proof for someone such as, say, Joanne, who feels harassed? Does she have to have something on paper, or does she have to have a video, or, you know, what's this proof thing?
Well, very good question, and it's really a case-by-case analysis. If you call, incidentally, you'll get our hotline folks. You won't get me because I'm seldom in the office, so don't ask for me, but they would be the ones who would do an intake and look at your situation. And yes, the problem with discrimination is it's often one person's word against another. But if it appears that there is an issue there and it moves forward in the complaint process, that would involve an investigation. And that could be talking to witnesses. It could be looking at paperwork. In some types of situations, not the one Joanne brought up, we send out testers kind of like secret shoppers to see if people are treated differently. But, you know, I can't say it's going to work in every example because, as you said, Lisa, there is something about proof and evidence. And the hardest thing is if it's one person's word against another. So something Joanne, for example, would want to think about is, have any neighbors heard this and witnessed? Has there been anything in writing? Is there anything else I have? And also, anyone who thinks they're being discriminated against should document to the best of their ability.
I was just going to say, keep a diary.
Keep a diary, keep a log. Put down, you know, March 31st, the manager once again called me a blah, 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 and didn't fix my whatever. You know, you want to keep a log because if you decide to move forward, that's going to really help you.
And we're speaking with Diane Hess of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. The number to call if you have a question here is 503-231-8187. And Diane, you mentioned the testers. This is fascinating. The Fair Housing Council does audits. They do fairness audits in regional areas. Can you talk about that?
Right. Well, let me start at the beginning with what testing is. A lot of people may never have heard of fair housing testers, but they've probably heard of secret shoppers, and it's kind of similar to that. Originally, when the Fair Housing Act passed after the death of Dr. King in 1968, the enforcement mechanisms were pretty weak. There wasn't a lot we could do. In 1988, it became legal to send out testers. So what that means is let's say we get a call on our hotline and someone says, you know, I don't know if there was discrimination, but here's what happens, and it happened, and it felt a little strange. I talked to the manager over the phone. She said there were 3 units available. Okay, I rushed and I got out there, and I was over there 2 hours later, and she said all 3 units had already been rented. Seemed a little odd. She was very nice. She offered to put my name on a waiting list, but then I started thinking, I wonder if that was because of my headscarf, or I wonder if that was because of my seeing eye dog, or I wonder if that was because of the religious symbol around my neck, or all my kids, or whatever. I wonder if she was really being straight with me and telling me the truth. I'm starting to think maybe she wasn't. We might, in a case like that, send out testers to see if there's differential treatment. So, for example, I'll make it simple. Let's say it's race. We suspect that this landlord is discriminating, or real estate agent, or whoever, lender, based on race. We send out an African-American couple and a white couple, or sometimes it's mixed race, that's the question, a mixed race couple. Is one told, yes, there's a unit, and the other, no? Or are they given different information, different amounts of rent, different deposits? The white couple shown a really attractive unit with a view. The African-American couple is shown a unit right by the dumpster. Or, you know, who's being told about the benefits, who's given an application, all of these kinds of things. And when we get that information, Lisa was asking about evidence. That is very strong evidence. When we get testers reporting that differential treatment, that's probably going to mean a lot of the private attorneys are going to be saying, hey, we want that case, you know, seeing attorney fees besides going through a governmental enforcement process. So we do testing in response to complaints. We've also just started doing something called audit testing, where we just go out to see what's happening. We randomly look at Craigslist and the local newspapers, no complaint, and we send out testers. And actually, I've been astonished by what we found, how bad it is. For example, you know, Ashland, which you think of as, you know, a pretty cool area, not like some of the areas around it in these ways, almost 70% of the tests we did based on race showed differential treatment based on race. Same thing in Beaverton, 78% of those interactions with testers showed differential treatment based on race. This is much worse than most people would suspect in the year 2010. Now, they're not saying, no, we will not rent to African Americans. Goodbye. They may be very, very nice, but they may not tell them about the deals or the benefits or not give them the paperwork. And, you know, and we send several testers out. We don't just judge based on one test because someone could be having a bad day or a headache or something that influences the differential treatment. So we'll send out several sets of testers to see whether there's a pattern where people are being treated differently because of their race, their national origin, sexual orientation, disability, and so on.
And this is KBOO Portland. I'm Lisa Loving, and this is Talk Radio. Our guest is Diane Hess of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. We're actually talking about the Fair Housing Council's 20th anniversary fundraiser, which is April 23rd. I believe it's a Friday, April 23rd. And it's a morning program at 8:30 a.m. starts an historic bus tour of Portland's hidden history of discrimination. Then at noon, a lunch program featuring Kevin Boyle. He's the author of Arc of Justice, a saga of race, civil rights, and murder in the jazz age. That book won the National Book Award. And the number to call if you have a question or a comment, 503-231-8187. Diane, again, we look at these issues of fair housing, how key that is in so many other issues, but I think really a lot of people take it for granted, or they think it's something they did, or they don't think about all of the factors that go into, for example, the shooting of Aaron Campbell, as I already brought it up. And this book, Arc of Justice, it's also about a shooting. Can you talk about Kevin Boyle's work, who's going to be the keynote for your big fundraiser in April?
Yes. First of all, I don't know if any of the listeners have already read Arc of Justice, but it's a fantastic book, and it's a page-turner, and I was so excited when Dr. Boyle agreed to come out here. The book deals with a court case, a very kind of, it's a page turner, kind of exciting court case, but that court case is at the center of some larger developments historically. In this case, which was back in the 20s in Michigan, a very significant case, People versus Ossie and Sweet, we had an African American middle class doctor who moved into a white neighborhood. The neighbors were very upset about this, and in some ways justifiably so, because if an African American moved into their neighborhood, the way things were set up at that point with the mortgage industry and the lenders and so on, is their property values were going to go down, there were going to be all kinds of problems. So they were afraid, they were angry, and so they gathered around the house the first couple of nights and started pelting the house with rocks. The family was frightened, holed up in the house. They shot out the window with a rifle and killed someone.
The family,
the African-American family that was kind of holed up in the house that they had just moved into, was frightened by, you know, the rocks were being thrown at their windows, and so they shot outside the window and inadvertently killed someone.
Those were the days when lynch mobs would surround a family's house and drag someone out and kill them. Anyway, so keep going.
So that led to a very major case. And if anyone's heard of Clarence Darrow, the famous defense attorney from the Scopes trial and many other cases, he took the case of Ossie and Sweet, the right for him to defend his home, the right for him to move into this white neighborhood. The Ku Klux Klan was very involved. In the 1920s, the Ku Klux Klan was huge in this country. And that's one of the things we'll talk about on our bus tour, because Oregon had the largest Ku Klux Klan west of the Rocky Mountains back in the 20s. We were part of the same thing. It was also the beginning of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, this case. This case became a centerpiece of developing that fund and the NAACP strategy that led toward Brown versus Board of Education and desegregating the schools. In the book, the case is at the center of looking at a lot of larger developments, the mass emigration from the South to the North, of African Americans who went into factory jobs. And this, again, was an issue here in Portland, more in World War II, the reaction to this immigration of African Americans, an increase in segregation, an increase in discrimination, segregated housing patterns becoming solidified, and the beginning of advocacy efforts. I want to say I heard Dr. Boyle speak in Atlanta, and not only is he a great author, but he's a great speaker, and it's a fascinating story. If people are interested in coming to this event, what I want to let you know, I'll probably mention this a couple of times, is our registration deadline is April 14th. If you're interested, you can go to our website to get the registration form, and that's www.fhco, as in Fair Housing Council of Oregon, .org. You can also call me if need be. And that's 503-223-8197, extension 108. But if you are interested, we need to get your registration by the 14th. And you may 503-223-8197. I'm at extension 108 if you're interested in registering to come to this fundraiser. Now, you can just come to the bus tour, you can just come to the luncheon event with Dr. Boyle, or you can come to both.
This is Talk Radio. I'm Lisa Loving. I'm your host. Our guest is Diane Hess of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. We're looking at the ways that housing law affects civil rights and issues of personal safety, even in neighborhoods. And, you know, I'm getting cranky because we've only had one caller, and this issue is so key, even to all of the police accountability incidents that we've seen over the past couple of months. And we've had a real boiling point with those issues. You know, all these young black-clad so-called anarchists can go and throw stuff around in the street, but all they're doing is playing a game, and they're not changing anything. And it's this issue of housing law. You know, what if the gentleman who was shot at the Hoyt Arboretum, who actually begged the police for mental health counseling, this person should have had housing. Maybe part of the reason that he didn't have it was because people took one look at him and discriminated against him on the basis of his mental health. And now we're finding that that's against the law. And I mean, I need people to give us a call at 503-231-8187, because I'm just putting this out that I'm a little sick and tired of people complaining about Jesse Jackson, right? But not even stepping up to understand the full dynamics of these issues. You know what? It's not always the police's fault. I'm just putting that out. And if you want to argue about that, give me a call, 503-231-8187. And, you know, all these young people kicking reporters out of their so-called anarchist organizing meetings, as happened to James Pitkin at the Willamette Week. That cracked me up. That story was really funny. James Pitkin, he's the reporter for the Willamette Week, and he went to a planning meeting that young people had getting ready for this demonstration, as it turns out. And they actually kicked him out. The anarchist youth voted him off the island. If you don't see the humor in that, well, I don't have a lot of time. But anyway, we're looking at these issues of life and death. We're looking at the long history of African-American people having to fight off mobs outside their homes, which is really not so different. I'm just putting this out. It's really not so different than what happened to Aaron Campbell. If you really want to drill down to why he was killed like that, you need to look at these concentrations of poverty. You need to look at how these fair housing laws are carried out. And, it's time for people to start stepping up and learning the dynamics of how communities work. I mean, I'm just putting that out. 503-231-8187. Diane, are you as mad as I am?
I am, and as I listen to you, I'm clicking. All my brain synapses are going about all kinds of things that I'd like to mention. But yes, everything is integrated. Everything is connected. And another example of that is this. You know, when we're watching the news and we're watching, you know, about the tea parties and these militias, I'm going to tell you, there's a growth in hate crimes, not only nationally and locally. And last year, I guess first it was the Secretary of Homeland Security, and then it was the Southern Poverty Law Center that was noting not only the increase with militias, but the linking of, the Aryan Nation racist groups and some of the anti-government groups like the Timothy McVeigh groups, because of the fear that the demographics are changing here, African-American president, immigration, and so on. And so how does that relate to fair housing? Well, It means we've had an increase in harassment. Hopefully it won't lead to, shootings. Again, each year there is an increase in hate crimes here in Oregon, here in the city of Portland, from big cities to like the tiny town of Alsea in Leonard Benton County, where they burned a cross on the lawn of a white woman who adopted an African-American child. And there are enforcement mechanisms under the Fair Housing Act in addition to the federal and state hate crime legislation. But what we see on the ground is an increase in people being harassed. And it all intersects those stories on the news and what's happening in a local apartment complex.
And we do have a caller, the number to call, 503-231-8187. Caller.
Hello.
Tyler, what's going on?
Hey, well, I just want to tell you that I think that what you're doing is great, and all of the movements that are happening simultaneously, I think, are assisting in leading to a critical mass and a raised consciousness, and I just want you to know that I appreciate the work that you do.
Thanks, Tyler, because I was really crabby there and feeling left out.
Yeah, don't feel left out. I think there's a lot of people listening, but maybe they don't have anything to say about the issue because you're being so thorough in your examination. I think it's great. And I'm going to look forward to coming on the tour, and I'm a videographer, and I'd like to volunteer my services to help, expand your outreach by videotaping the tour for you. So.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay.
So I also want to backtrack a little bit since we don't have a caller.
We actually have two.
Oh, we
callers,
have two.
I think.
Never mind.
No, well, we'll get back to you, Diane.
Okay.
This is Talk Radio. Our guest is Diane Hess of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. The number is 503-231-8187. And we have Stevie on the line. What's going on, Stevie?
Hi. I have a couple of questions regarding your topic today because it's something I'm experiencing firsthand right now.
Right on.
I managed to become a domestic violence survivor, which is awesome, and I use the Housing Authority Tenants' Rights Association to maintain my residence because I guess in the state of Oregon it's totally illegal to evict someone experiencing domestic violence. But now, going into looking for a new place that's safer, he's giving me bad references. And he says that there's nothing illegal about telling people that there's a bunch of noise disturbances, and I tried to explain to him, if the person's not invited over, then, legally, how could I be responsible for that? So that's where I am right now, is trying to, I've got the money for the apartment. I'm a hardworking white female with a kid, That's just not good enough. I'm not really sure. Maybe you could repeat the phone number and I could talk to you about the details at a later time. But I'll take my
Stevie.
Ass off there.
Thanks a lot for calling, Stevie. What do you think, Diane?
Well, thank you so much for calling, Stevie. What I'm going to do is I'm going to answer your question in a general way, and then I'm going to finish off with our hotline number because I want you to call our hotline because from what you're saying right now, you're definitely experiencing illegal discrimination. As you said, domestic violence victims are a protected class. So what someone in your situation needs to do when they go out and look for housing is explain to prospective landlords, you're going to find some issues in my history. They're related to me being a domestic violence victim. That was my ex who trashed the place, did whatever. You're going to need either some kind of verification to show, whether it's a restraining order, police report, letter from Department of Human Services or a domestic violence program or something. You are going to need some written verification to back that up. If the prospective landlord blows you off and says, well, I see from these references, I don't care, whatever, that is a violation because domestic violence victims are protected. One of the things we see that happens is a landlord will make an assumption, which is completely wrong under fair housing laws, thinking, oh, this guy's going to come back. If that happens, that's to be dealt with at the time, not to be assumed. So in your situation, Stevie, you definitely have an issue. I'm going to give our hotline number, which is 503-223-8197. And what I'm also going to say to you, Stevie, and to Joanne, if you want to call our hotline to speed things up, press extension 2, and you will go directly to the hotline. But that is definitely an issue that we would want to assist you with.
And we are speaking with Diane Hess of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. The number to call to contribute to this conversation is 503-231-8187. If you think that you might be experiencing some kind of discrimination, we would love to hear from you. Also, if you have observations about some of these wider trends of concentration of poverty, concentration of racial and ethnic groups in small places where police are called in for whatever reason, please also give us a call, 503-231-8187. And we have a caller. Tim, what's on your mind?
Hi. I just have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, how do these laws apply, or how do they differ if you're in a situation where you say you own a house and you're looking for someone to share the home with you, a roommate, or rent out a room or something like that? And
good question.
Ooh, Tim.
Yeah, if you could just explain how that is, I'll hang up and let you go.
Thanks a lot, Tim.
The short answer, first of all, is under Oregon state law, all housing is covered. There are some exemptions. If you want to share, a room in your home, you are legally, you could discriminate based on gender, based on familial status, and sexual orientation. You still could not discriminate based on race, national origin, any of the other issues there if there is shared living space. That doesn't apply if you have, say, a mother-in-law unit or a separate basement unit. To be honest, we don't spend a lot of time enforcing this or get a lot of complaints, but it does fall under the law. You never want to advertise and say we're looking for a Christian to move into our home. You could say we want a vegetarian who likes dogs and likes jazz or something like that, but not someone who's white or something of that nature. But yes, shared housing, obviously, There's a lot that goes on there. But if somebody feels they were turned down, and this did happen once that I can recall for a shared housing situation and the person thought it was because he was Middle Eastern, there's definitely a potential issue there. So I would recommend you, even if you're sharing a home, you follow fair housing law. But again, if there are shared bathrooms and living space, there is an exemption where you could say you want someone of your sex, no kids, and actually sexual orientation as well would be the loopholes there.
That's really interesting. We're speaking with Diane Hess of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. The number to call to contribute to this conversation is 503-231-8187.
8197.
No, this is the...
Oh, your number. I'm sorry. I'm on autopilot. Forget what I said.
That's why I was trying to keep some of the numbers separate. If we tossed too many of them out. So
yeah.
The number to call to contribute to this conversation is 503-231-8187. And we're going to put the hotline number by the front desk so that people can call throughout the day to get that number.
Can I make another point going back for
Absolutely.
A moment first?
Absolutely.
I was thinking of Stevie's call and the situation she was in. And I wanted to mention, because there's something analogous to that. Let's say you have problems in your rental history in the past, but it's not because of being a domestic violence survivor and the abusive ex. It's because of issues related to your disability. So say, for example, 3-4 years ago, I completely trashed this apartment, but I have a mental disability and I wasn't taking my medications. Now I take my medications. I'm not the same person, and I have this dark cloud hanging over my head. I would kind of go through a similar process to what Stevie would go through. I would explain to the landlord this was because of a disability. I can verify it was because of a disability. It's in my past. It's not an issue now. I brought a letter from my mental health provider, my boss, whatever, to back me up. The landlord should consider making that accommodation for me. And if they don't, that would be a reason to call our hotline. Your job is to show, if you have these problems in your past, that it was because of a disability and you've turned your life around. Mm. Another example of this was, this is actually years ago when, a lot of the treatments for HIV were just starting to come out. But there was a guy who was HIV positive. He thought he was going to die, and he maxed out all his credit cards and ruined his credit history. So the good news was he was going to live, but he couldn't find a place to live. So same idea. He got a letter from Cascade AIDS Project, from his doctor, Consumer Credit Counseling of Oregon, showing he was paying off his debt every month, saying, hey, this was all in relation to a disability, and you can see I've turned things around.
Wow.
So something to be aware of. It doesn't mean everyone with a bad history can overcome this, but if it is disability related and you can verify your situation has changed with some letters, fair housing law could kick in to help you.
Interesting. And we're with Diane Hess of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. The number to call to contribute to this conversation is 503-231-8187. And we do have Greg on the line. Greg, what's going on?
Hi there.
Hi.
I only got a book that I read last year, and I tried to spread the word. This seems like a fine opportunity.
Okay.
I actually was out of the room for a second. You guys were talking about this lynching. Was it Oregon?
No, this is Arc of Justice, A Saga of Race, Civil Rights, and Murder in the Jazz Age, book by Kevin Boyle, who's going to be the keynote speaker at the Fair Housing Council of Oregon annual fundraiser, April 23rd. And where was this taking place?
Well, the book was not about a lynching, but it was definitely something very scary. That was in Michigan. We also certainly, and maybe that's where you're going with this, have incidents of similar things that happened here in Oregon.
But go on, Greg. Tell us about your book.
Actually, what I wanted to talk about was that these things were written about, and a great book came out about 5 years ago. It's called Sundown Towns.
Yes.
And it completely blew my mind.
Is that about Oregon?
No, it's about the whole country.
Wow.
For instance, here in Oregon, we always talk about, oh gosh, blacks aren't here because, you know, by law they weren't here. They had the Ku Klux Klan. Well, it was everywhere. Sundown towns occurred everywhere that were outside of the traditional South, basically enforced by real estate agents. Well, I thought this was a good venue. No academic historian ever written about this subject. Now we know about certain instances in towns, for instance, Michigan. Chicago and Detroit were huge areas of segregated housing. This is within the cities. And what this author talks about is that we had a huge forcing of blacks from rural areas into cities in between like 1890 and 1930. Then you had many, many towns that barred blacks and other ethnic groups or Catholics from buying houses and living there. They could work there, but they couldn't live there. So all across the country, we had thousands of these towns. I was talking about in the Midwest, where I grew up, in the East. We had signs outside of the town, sundown town signs. They've all disappeared, and so the pictures. Now, a lot of this stuff changed, say, after 54 Brown desegregation case, after the Civil Rights Act started in 64, a lot of the signs disappeared. But the real estate agents were so enforcing the housing that was excluding African Americans. And after a while, say in the 80s, and some of these signs stayed up in the 80s in some towns, some, you know, areas that were really known as bad areas, like say Southern Indiana or Southern Illinois, where the author of this book grew up. He grew up, he spent his whole career looking at hidden history and has actually never been able to figure this out until he started to realize that the incidents that happened when he was growing up actually happened over a wide area and actually happened over the whole country.
Mm.
Now, most people think of lynchings, for instance, they think of down south. This is where you had segregation. This is where you had colored drinking fountains. This is what everybody thinks about. It's what all the academic departments have written about, many books written about lynchings. Nobody's written about this institutionalized way of excluding people from towns. One very interesting fact, for many, many years, in fact, until 1964, the Democratic Party was known as the White Man's Party. Mm-hmm. And was institutional. It was a big driving factor, as the Ku Klux Klan was, behind excluding people from all these towns. Now, the name of the book is Sundown Towns, and it's by James Lowen, the guy who wrote Author of Lies, My Teacher Told Me.
Thanks a lot, Greg. You know, I'm so glad that you called because there is a development expert named Myron Orfield from the University of Minnesota who prepared a study for Metro, our Metro agency, which is on the verge of doing what's called the Portland Plan. It's like a 10-year or 20-year plan for development around the whole Metro area. And that sounds so boring and stupid. And who cares about development and stuff like that? But what Myron Orfield is saying in his report is that even though the Portland metro area is way better than many other places around the country in terms of what they call racial isolation, Portland in the next 10 years faces a crisis of racial isolation. And some of the most key people in turning that around are really boring urban planners and real estate agents. Real estate agents are super powerful. And I know a couple of agents who make a point of not steering people who come to them for services to communities that are full of people that already look like those clients. I know a few, but this issue of what the real estate agents do for people that are looking to buy property, this idea of steering, it has a huge impact. Real estate agents, and I don't want to say be rude about the real estate agents, but my God, who knew?
They have huge monopoly powers because they sell the vast majority of the houses. And what the segregation today, and this guy talks about it in the book, is, you know, mostly segregation, of course, by class.
Mm-hmm.
And if you use certain words or don't use certain words, you can't be prosecuted.
Greg,
they still have immense power.
I want to add that that is a great book, and I also want to mention...
Wait a minute, you read the book?
Yes.
First person I've heard of.
She was jumping up and down when you mentioned it.
And actually, we've had... Well, Portland did not have sundown laws. Cities all over the state and towns did. In fact, I talked to someone who worked in Pendleton to try to end it in the 1960s. But
when I talk about laws, we're just talking about where people, for instance, Oregon City didn't let Black Map was in until the 80s, which you're probably aware of.
Right. The laws were generally not on the books, but there were signs. There was a sign in Ashland, and it was enforced by law enforcement. But, you know, something, I can't remember the website, but people can Google sundown laws, and there's the website you can bring up, and you can go through all the cities and towns in Oregon, and people, perhaps you've been on it, will submit, you know, their memories and say, hey, in Springfield, this happened, or, you know, whatever. And that's a great website, and I wish I could remember the actual website, but you can Google it and look up cities and towns in Oregon that had sundown laws.
The thing about it is, because it's a hidden history, he went in and did oral histories of some very few people that saw the incidents, many of their descendants, because it was never written about. Basically, the only ones we know about are where they didn't drive the blacks out of the towns or out of the rural areas, like, say, Springfield, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And people survived, so there was accounts written of it. Because nobody survived the other accounts, nothing been written about it.
The victor writes the history. Thanks a lot for calling, Greg. Really super appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, you'll talk to a lot of older African Americans who were from Portland, and they said you really needed to fill up your gas tank when you were headed to California and make that drive, because most places you could not stay overnight for many years. You know, 6 o'clock, don't darken this town. Now, in some areas of the state, it wasn't only African Americans, it was also Asians as well.
And we are speaking with Diane Hess of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. We do have a few more minutes in this show for people that may want to give us a call. 503-231-8187. We're talking about the myriad of issues that are affected by fair housing law. Also, we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, which has their annual fundraiser April 23rd at 8:30 a.m., the historic bus tour, a tour of Portland's hidden history of discrimination. And then at noon, the lunch program featuring Kevin Boyle, the author of Arc of Justice, a saga of race, civil rights, and murder in the jazz age, National Book Award winner. And also at that lunch program, people from the Fair Housing Council of Oregon will give an update on the status of fair housing in the state of Oregon. And I have to take a moment and say at 9 a.m. this morning on Political Perspectives, we'll hear a panel discussion called 7 Years Since Iraq Invasion, a teach-in that's coming up in about 5 minutes. The panel features veterans and anti-war activists talking about the ongoing presence of the U.S. military and contractors on the 7th anniversary of the 2003 invasion. This discussion was recorded on Saturday, March 20th at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, locally produced headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre and Liam Delta. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. Today, Kathy Kelly talks about U.S. drone killings in Afghanistan. David Lindorf talks about the possible state execution of an innocent man in Texas. At 11, we'll hear some special programming about the infamous Dr. Jack Kevorkian. We'll hear how a curious pathologist turned into an expert on death and challenged our ideas of life and self-determination, hosted and produced by David Darcy, with insights from Jack Kevorkian himself and others involved in the issue. And Diane Hess, any last, what's the most important thing that people should know about the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, your 20th anniversary, your event coming up April 23rd? What's the most important thing?
Well, two important things. One is if you think you might be experiencing housing discrimination, call our hotline, 503-223-8197, and you can expedite things by pressing extension 2. If you'd like to come to our anniversary fundraiser event on the 23rd, we'd love to have you. The registration deadline is April 14th. You can get the form on our website, www.fhco.org, and then you'd mail it in with a check. My extension, my number is again 503-223-8197, and I'm at extension 108 if you have any questions about the event.
And we're going to put this information by the front desk. And yeah, by the way, that April 23rd event, that's their biggest fundraiser, their only fundraiser of the year, so it does cost money. So be prepared to support this work. It's really important work, and also know that it can support your life too if you're having problems.
Yes, we hope to see you then, and spread the word if you know anyone who might have a housing discrimination issue.
All right, thanks a lot, Diane. And this is KBOO Portland. Stay tuned.